Thank you, Naveen. And just to add a few things, talked a lot, and Naveen talked right now about the comfort of talking of people who are, we are speaking about violence in Delhi and then versus violence in Punjab. So again, if you think from a Sikh feminist lens, we're always asking the question, what makes something feminist research is the motivations behind it and is looking and what we and the knowledges that we're actually, you know, considering as legitimate. So if we actually look beyond people who have already been written about and have been documented and actually ask whose voices are we not hearing, and what, and even the people who've spoken many times, what is it in their voices that's not been told? So from a Tilak Vihar point of view, as Amit's saying, oftentimes people have been asked so many times to tell their stories as a victim that it starts playing almost as if you hit play on some sort of tape recorder. They start saying their story exactly the same again. And sometimes asking a question about, wow, you're in front of me, how does that feel to have survived this, is sometimes a question they've never been asked, no matter how many journalists have been interviewed by for the last 30 years. We heard a little bit from Uma Chakravarti about a feminist lens from a non-Sikh perspective being applied to one segment of the Sikh community in 1984. So, by focusing just on the widows of November 1984, only in Delhi and not around the rest of the country, or not focusing on the widows and the orphans and survivors of violence of June 1984, or for example, the women who talk about the Tarang Yudh Mochas through the 80s and in 84, there are voices being left out. A Sikh feminist lens would want to look at those voices as well. We're not just asking for her stories, right? So that whole concept, that's what we're asking for. One of the clips in here talks about gendered violence against men, very sexualized form, and gendered violence. The entire violence was gendered. Men were killed because if they're perceived as male, they were killed. And so there's that. And women who were raped or women who were spared from killing but were tortured in certain ways, that was because of women. So it's all gendered. But she talks about men being pulled out, Sikh men with long hair, their hair being open, and them being forced to dance. A Sikh feminist lens would look at that gendered violence. We'd not be ignoring that violence. We'd try to understand that more. We focus on women perpetrators. That's what somebody talked about, how the local Congress leader's wife is the one who gave the final oil with which her husband was born, with which her father was born to death. And also, there is the tension of sometimes when we talk to women and we say, why are they not telling more of their story? Why are they not speaking more about what happened to them and how great they were in surviving it? And why are they not talking about their personal trauma? There is the whole point of when we work as in the domestic violence sphere, which was talked about earlier, or as rape crisis counselors, we very much respect privacy. We very much, it's the last thing I would do as a crisis counselor to give up any information to somebody I'm working with. Even if ordered by court, then it's on me to decide if I want to be in contempt, held in contempt or not. It's something we hold on to dearly. That person's agency, there, in fact, even secrecy is a form of agency for a lot of survivors of violence. Why then, when it comes to state violence, do we want to keep prodding women who choose not to talk about the violence? This is something we have to ask ourselves. We don't have stories about rape, we don't have the stories, women are not saying anything about rape. Why should they? Maybe they choose not to, and that's their choice. And a Sikh feminist needs to be comfortable with that. We need to be very uncomfortable with the pictures of crying women on the cover of 84 flyers all the time. We need to be very uncomfortable with that. Unless that woman specifically gave consent to have a picture of her in that state of trauma, we need to be uncomfortable. So Sikh feminist lens would challenge a lot of the questions and would raise a lot of the questions that were brought up today. It would also recognize that Cynthia Engel, the anthropologist who's from her book, I'm quoting from her book, Fighting for Faith and Nation, talks about how some Sikh women interlocutors, she reports back, Western feminism, with its refusal to defer in any space, strikes many Sikh women as rather silly. From the viewpoint of women who daily risk death, the discussion of who washes the dishes tonight seems absurdity. Now, this statement speaks a lot to how Sikh women perceive Western feminism, but it also speaks to the fact that for some Sikh women who have faced the kind of violence and the kind of have survived the kind of situation that we're talking about here, some of the questions we sometimes ask them really mean nothing and they might seem silly. And as feminists, and as feminists who understand the plurality of voices, we would be comfortable with that. Finally, instead of looking at a woman and asking, what happened to you, hopefully we'll start looking at women and men and asking, who are you? What would you like to talk to me about? What would you like to hear from me? And with that, we could build a community. So with this, I believe these are just some questions we'd like to raise as SUFR. Hopefully we'll be writing a little more on what some of the stuff we've raised today relating to 84. And I'm going to try to not so neatly segue to a point about writing, which is in fact switching gears a little bit into, here's some really happy news, that SUFR has all our presenters today have the opportunity to submit their papers for consideration for publication in SICK Formations, in the journal SICK Formations, and they are very happy to do a SICK Feminism special, you know, with these papers. And it's also a great way to have some sort of yardstick of developing a lot of the amazing discussions into papers when we go back to our regular jobs and lives, and it's sometimes hard to work on these papers in our spare time. Hopefully this will be incentive to finish the papers, submit them, and there is this opportunity for publication. We hope it happens, because the more these things are published, the more younger academics and students and community organizers will be able to cite to their own. And the less will we have to talk about our voices being appropriated by someone else, or where am I in this research, et cetera, et cetera. We can actually write for ourselves, which the women today have made very clear. So with that, I'm going to pass it on to our acting executive director for SUFR to thank you all. It's going to be quick, and there's jaw coffee and refreshments after this. So get